Time for another talk. Are you ready? Because I'm not. I was just waiting for some people to walk out. Which is good, because I don't need to say much. Oh, some more leaving. Bye-bye. Okay, so it's nice to see everybody again. Some of us are pretty relaxed and chilled. I see a lot of familiar faces, some new faces as well. So yeah, it's good to see you. And we're just all coming here together to just listen to something different, I guess, from a Buddhist monk. And I was just thinking about it earlier, and sort of just like the journey that a monk takes or a Buddhist takes, like myself or Sumangalo, at a point in time in our lives, we decided to do something different. But at the same time, even though we're doing something different, we're human beings as well, you know? Our daily routine doesn't differ that much from, I think, what you guys do up there. You know, monks wake up in the morning and we eat porridge. Yeah. when the weather is good, you know, we go to work. We work in the monastery. You know, we don't have jobs where we go out and earn money, but we have large properties to take care of. So in a sense, there's a work side of it as well. And then we eat, just like everybody else. And then we go to sleep and have a shower and all that kind of thing. And in a sense, I was just thinking about it. We're just human beings, just living our normal everyday life. And it's sort of like I had a conversation earlier with somebody, and I wasn't talking to a Buddhist. I was just talking to a person. We're just talking about this and that and what I'm going to do in the future, or, you know, what's going to happen with Kusala Hermitage. And, you know, in a sense, we're just human beings at the end of the day, with whatever thoughts we have, emotions, outlook on life. But I think when it comes to, like, you know, making a decision to come here, because you never know. I was one of these young people that came in here and sat down where you guys were sitting right now. You never know, one day you guys could be up here sitting in my seat and teaching. Anyways, so basically it's just, we're just like human beings, just going on doing our everyday life, but with like the influence of like the Buddhist teachings to guide us. It's like sometimes people come here and they just want to make some sort of change to their life. And I just recalling sort of my experience when, you know, just growing up as a young boy in Perth, just having fun and like kind of naughty in terms of like not listening to mum. Oh my gosh, I gave my mother headaches. And in a sense, you know, when people look at that, it's sort of like he's not a very good kid. You know what I mean? He's causing like suffering for the people around him. And it's kind of like, because I think like one of the reasons why, you know, things like these kinds of attitude that you may have growing up as a kid or you may have now, is just something that you've sort of learnt as a young kid or something that you've been conditioned to have, and it's been accepted with the people around you. So, and also, it's a bit of like ignorance there on your part, not reflecting and understanding how your actions or what you say kind of affects the people around you. So I just kind of grew up like that, you know, a bit insensitive to my mother. I was really nice to my friends though. That's how it happens, right? And then, yeah, then things happen in life and then you just come across like I came here, just like you guys are, just sitting there listening to the Dhamma or listening to what the monks say and not saying anything like super profound. You know, we could sit here and talk about like enlightenment and all those nice things that, you know, Buddhism promises, but is very difficult to like achieve like in the moment. It's something that you have to work on and it may happen like in the future. But sometimes when you come into this kind of environment and you want to sort of do something with your life, just the simple teachings can sort of make a huge difference to how you relate to people. And just one of the things that I kind of picked up was just the kindness that you can just show the people around you. Yeah. And it just makes such a like a huge difference to like relationships that you're with or anything really. So after being a rat bag to my mother for many years, I was just like, just came here and decided maybe I'll just change my attitude towards, you know, the people who are close to me and just see how that goes. And yeah, it's not rocket science. You know, you just be nice to people, be kind, and it just makes like a world of difference to a sense of like harmony and just getting along with one another. And I was kind of thinking like, you know, sort of like we come here sometimes because we have problems. And I'm just reflecting on just the environment that I'm living in at the moment, where we have like a small hermitage up in Rolleystone, and there's 4 monks living there at the moment. There's myself, there's Ajahn Jayar, Ajahn Chittapalo, and so we're stealing all the Ajahns from Serpentine. That's what we're doing. So they're all there now. And we have a young novice, and yeah, we're getting along with each other, and you know, things are going fine. And I was just trying to, just thinking, you know, if you, like, in a sense, if you, like, people come here to sort of, like, sometimes people come here to find answers to their problems. But if you create a situation like something like we have in Kusala Hermitage, then kind of no problems arise. There's no problems to fix because hardly any problems happen because of how you're living your life. Yeah. So it's kind of an interesting like dynamic where we're living really close to each other, but is by the way that we live causes very little problems in our lives, you know? We're not slamming doors and shouting at each other and not talking to each other for days, as, you know, that happens sometimes when you're living at home. That kind of thing doesn't happen. So you know, it's sort of like, so, you know, how do you get to that point? Yeah, and it's all about like skillful living, how you're living your life. I mean, the Buddhist teaching always, like, Buddhist teaching always goes back to like the Noble Eightfold Path and just the right things to do, like right view, right speech, right intention, right effort, right this and right that. So there's a certain way that the Buddha was pointing our minds to in terms of how we talk to one another, how we treat one another to create lesser problems in life. And that's a wonderful thing, just being able to just live harmoniously in a group has so many benefits for the mind. You know, you can go and meditate, or you can go about doing your chores without worrying about what the person said a couple of days ago because he got angry at you. Because, you know, those kinds of things, you know, rarely happen in a place like that because, well, it's not true. They do happen, but because of our way of just using our minds to make our life better. And even though, like, we do get angry at one another, you know, when I ask them to work on a 35 degree day out in the sun, they lose their cool and sort of get frustrated at me. So I don't do that anymore. But at times, you know, you sort of lose it at one another, and you know, we're kind of like rough around the edges, you know. We're not like really super holy at times. But we understand, it's like, you know, we get caught up in the heat of the moment, and we say silly things that may you know, harm or hurt one another. But because we've learned how to sort of like forgive and not hold on to anything, then we're able to sort of just let it go and just allow that harmony to continue. And just being able to just hold that idea in mind where you know, you're not here as a human being to like cause trouble for one another, even though you may get angry. You may get angry, you might lose it, but you know, like within yourself, that was like the wrong thing to do, and you do what you can to make up for it. Like the other day, you know, we were like messing around with the coffee machine. We're messing around with the coffee machine. Yes. Coffee. So, you know, certain monks have like certain standards with the coffee. So this was like an example of sort of like, you know, someone losing their cool by just having in mind what is more important. You know, what's more important? Is it the coffee beans, or is it the harmony between, you know, the monks in the monastery? So it was actually, so what happened was we had the hopper, and there were some sort of beans, you know, coffee beans, which were sort of left over. And the number one rule with coffee is you don't mix the beans. Otherwise, it sort of ruins the batch, and you might get like a strange pour. So what I did, I was trying not to mention my name, but I guess I just did. So what I did anyways, I was thinking, oh, I didn't want to waste the beans, you know, so I'll just get them in the hopper and just mix them up. It'll be okay. It's not a big deal. So then I put it in, and then there was another person standing around. I won't mention his name. I won't let it slip. So he was there and he saw what happened, and he kind of, you know, lost it a bit at me, the abbot. You don't do that. And he lost it, and I was like, oh, yeah, you know, whatever, you know, these things going to happen. It's not a big deal. It just all mixes up. And you just allow people to just be, you know. You're not there to kind of judge them, because you kind of know who they are and what they're like. And you just let that episode just play out, because at the end of the day, I think people understand what's more important, and that's like the harmony and the care and the friendship. So they were always trying to find a way to make everything okay. And that's what I've learned just living with monks for many, many years. And so what he did, so, you know, he's kind of lost it. Now you know he's a monk, but you don't know who. Oh, you guys are paying attention. That's good. Anyway, that happened. We were okay with it. And then afterwards, he came up to me and sort of said, oh, you know, it's okay. They're just coffee beans, blah, 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 blah. You know, I won't die or whatever. And then it was over and done with, you know. Like sometimes, like, you know, we're not holding grudges. We value the friendship. And we understand that if you were sort of living together in a community like that, this is a very skillful way to live. Yeah. Very skillful way to live. And this is kind of something that I think each and every one of us can sort of learn from, is to not nitpick and fault find, you know, the little things that people do, and look at the bigger picture. Because I think I've seen in the past, you know, it's just, you know, someone might lose it and you get angry, and there's no forgiveness there. And then people just walk around like as if they were strangers, because they're kind of like holding on to something. And then, So these are the simple teachings that we can sort of place into our lives just to make them better. Because human life is, you know, we just have a body, we have a mind. And in a sense, we are complicated human beings, but at the same time, you know, we are simple. And our minds just basically just goes in a few directions. And the Buddha always talked about kind of the mind going towards like wholesome states of mind, or the mind going to like a negative state. And that's what the, you know, when people come here, I just remembering this word. The word is called, is a Pali word, and it's called bhavana, which basically means sort of like the development of the mind. And this is one of the lovely things that I really cherish about just just the Buddha's path, and just taking something on at a young age and just allowing it to develop over the years. This idea of just working on the mind day in, day out, year in, year out, is not something that you know, you just go on a meditation retreat for 9 days and, you know, you become enlightened and then you can just go out and do whatever you want. But instead, for me, it's always been a path that is very gradual, and it's done step by step with ever increasing levels of happiness. And this is one of the quotes that is stuck in my mind for a long time as a young monk was, you know, the teachings of the Buddha, there's like happiness. There's happiness at the beginning of the teachings, happiness in the middle, and sort of like happiness at the end. And that kind of got me thinking, it's sort of like wherever you are on this path, you know, whether you're at the beginning or practicing for a long time, or you're at the end of the path, like every stage, there's some happiness to be benefited from it. And that's what I thought, because sometimes I thought like, oh, you only get happiness towards the end of the path because of the, you know, you get taught as a monk the deep meditations, the enlightenment, and that's sort of like at the end of the path. And I was like, that's no fun. You know, I want to be happy as I'm practicing it, or happy as I'm going along with the journey. You know, it kind of didn't make sense if this Buddha's path was a path where you just suffered from the beginning, you suffered through the middle, and you only got happiness at the end. Because I think the mind doesn't work that way. The mind kind of needs a little bit of satisfaction to keep it going. Yeah. Like, that's why, you know, Buddhism or monastic life or whatever, it's an everyday practice of just finding some sort of satisfaction through being kind or helping out. Or, you know, even the meditation. I mean, I think a lot of people in general, like in this, I think in the time of the Buddha till this very day, there is a sincere like interest in the meditation practice. And I always kind of think like, you know, even though you don't understand the truths of life, sometimes, you know, it's kind of trying to philosophize about life. You know, what does this mean? Or, you know, those tough questions or those concepts that you can't kind of figure out, kind of keeping people a little bit confused. I'm always think that, yeah, even that happens in Buddhism, like with the, you've been here on the weekends and you get all these teachings from like the suttas. I mean, the suttas are like 10 books or something like that, you know. Looks a bit confusing at times to me. But I think there's always something that you can always like go back to that is solid. It's solid, it's sort of a part of the path, and it's something which you can like experience in this very moment. And this to me is the silent or the peaceful, calm states of mind that you can experience in your meditation. You know, you don't have to be like a whiz meditator. You can just be anybody who just puts time into their meditation practice and observes the mind to just see what arises. And after some time, you'll start to see that there's peace and stillness within the mind. And I think, like for me anyways, all the words that come from the books, all the ideas, you know, you may be able to see great teachers and they can explain things very well. And your mind may get it, but, you know, how much does it really move you in your, like, spiritual practice? So sometimes it does move you a lot, but sometimes it doesn't. So for me, it's always, though, going back to that place where there's some comfort that you're practicing in the right way. And that's the place where you meditate and where there's peace and quiet in the mind. And when it comes to this, like when it comes to this kind of like, you know, when you sit up here, when you sit down there and you look at monks and you kind of, you know, what are they all about? And just talking to the younger monks, you know, it's sort of like when you ordain as a monk, it's always about the meditation, you know, that's the main focus. So we put aside everything, you know, whatever we were doing in the past, and just become monks to focus on the meditation. And that's one of the main reasons why we do it. And so, yeah. Yeah. And there's a story that sort of came to mind. Just stories that kind of, you know, what should I kind of talk about before I gave the talk? And the story about, you know, karma is that story about the two bakers that Ajahn talks about. Tells the story that Ajahn tells, and it's basically trying to teach people that, you know, it doesn't really matter what you have, is kind of what you do with it. And the story goes, there were two bakers, and one baker had like a poor oven, very bad ingredients. There was mold in the flour, the sugar was a little bit old, the oven was working, but the seals weren't there. So a pretty shabby existence for this one cook. And then this other cook, she had everything, and she had the best oven and the finest ingredients. And then both of them went to bake a cake, and Ajahn Brahm would go and tell the story, and it's sort of like, you know, which one bakes the better cake? And obviously the story is not about the person with the best ingredients or the best situation that bakes the better cake. But it's like, so it was a person with the poorer ingredients with the oven that didn't work. She was the one that baked the better cake. And it's sort of like, what's the moral of the story? It's sort of like, it isn't the ingredients or the situation that you kind of put in that determines the outcome of what you're trying to do, but instead it's the type of effort that you put into whatever you're doing to get the results. And it's kind of, so this one time, there was this in Thailand. So it's sort of like what I'm trying to say is like, it doesn't really matter the situation that you come from. It's the kind of effort that you put in to whatever you're doing gets a certain result. And I just remember a story that just come to mind was there was a kid growing up in Thailand, and he failed everything when he was growing up. He went to school, he didn't do well at school. And so the parents didn't know what to do with him. And so what they did was they just sent him off to a monastery, and he tried to learn the chanting, but he couldn't do it. So the monks just taught him how to do breath meditation. So he sat down, and his mind sort of like inclined to it, and he was able to like put like good effort into watching the breath, going in, going out, going in. And even though like he sort of didn't have very good ingredients, but he put effort into one thing, this one simple thing, and that sort of kind of helped his mind develop in the meditation. And because of that, he sort of became one of the, you know, the wise monks in the village. And it's always kind of interesting when it comes to like this, when we're talking about effort and you know, how to live life and the amount of energy that we put into things. One of my favorite stories is a story that Ajahn Chah taught one of the Westerners that went to visit him in his monastery, and he applied that into his life, and because of that he got a lot of benefits from it. So what happened was Ajahn Chah at that time was a very busy monk. He saw a lot of people, and there was this one Australian that went there to sort of seek his advice. So he traveled all the way there, and he got to his monastery. And when he got there, Ajahn Chah was busy just talking to other lay people and giving them advice. And because he knew that he couldn't get an opportunity to talk to Ajahn Chah, then he just picked up a broom and started sweeping just to make some merit before he went back to his hotel, hung out in Thailand, and then took a flight back to Australia. So as he was sweeping, Ajahn Chah he got up and he was walking to his car and just getting ready to leave for his next appointment, and he saw that this person, obviously a foreigner, who came all the way from somewhere to visit him, to just see him or talk to him or whatever. And Ajahn Chah just gave him a few moments and said to him, you know, if you're sweeping, give it everything you got. And that's like a Dhamma teaching, the teaching of mindfulness, giving everything you got, whatever you're doing. And this person returned to Perth, and I think a couple of years later, or however long, he retold this story to Ajahn Brahm. And he told Ajahn Brahm that this was one of the best advice Ajahn Chah has given him, because it helped him in whatever he was doing. He became successful, a better person, because he was able to just give whatever he's doing 100%. Yeah. And this idea of giving things 100% in daily life helps the mind just live in the present moment. Just to be here, just to be now. And in a sense, like all problems that we have, kind of is created because we're thinking about the past, or we're thinking about the future, or we're just thinking in general. And helping us get our minds away from the thinking mind is to try to do the mundane tasks with a little bit more effort, with the advice that Ajahn Chah gave that person. So when you're walking to your car, you're doing it mindfully. Your mind's in the moment. It's not traveling here and there. It can be peaceful. Or you're driving in your car, or just doing whatever work you're doing. You're just giving it attention and just giving it attention, and then after a while you can just see the benefits that comes from just doing things mindfully. Yeah. Because all trouble, and it's true, a lot of trouble sort of happens within our own minds, because the mind is just traveling to the future or traveling to the past, or is just thinking too much. And when you think about it, a big part of the Buddha's teachings is to be able to just allow things to disappear, to let them go, because we understand that a mind which is free from these things, this kind of mind is happier. So a lot of the teachings point in that direction. It's like when we're, we're meditating, we kind of meditate to let go. Another example is, human beings, we kind of hold on to things, or we just ruminate about stuff, and it's heavy on our minds, and that's not very nice. And another kind of image that pops into my mind was Ajahn Chah was kind of going on Pindabat with his monks in Thailand, and he's always trying to find opportunities to teach his monks, just basic teachings on how to free the mind. And there was, a log by the side of the road that was blocking the way, and the monks were going on arms round. So this is a tradition that you don't see in Perth. in Australia that much, but you still see them in certain countries around the world. And it's basically monks just going for a walk in the morning with their bowls to collect food from the villagers. And that's the kind of, in a sense, we're dependent on the kindness of lay people to keep us fed and sort of looked after, really. So anyways, so this was a normal thing that was done in the mornings. And, you know, sometimes it can be a little bit brutal, hey, because I went to Thailand a couple of times and you would go on arms round with no shoes on. So, and the roads over there, they're not very friendly. And people just end up with like big cuts in their foot. And then, you know, some monks end up getting like parasites going through them. It's not a very kind of kind thing to do. But anyway, it happens. It happens. That's just the way life was back in those days. And so you know, back in Ajahn Chah's day, they would go for a walk. Things would be blocking the road. Ajahn Chah looking for an opportunity to teach. And they came across a log, big and heavy. So the monks picked it up. And as they were picking it up, Ajahn Chah would say, "Is it heavy?" Sort of like pointing to the mind. You know, like if you're holding something, like you're holding things, your mind becomes heavy. That was what he was pointing to. And like we hold on to arguments that's happened in the past. We're just holding on to ideas. We're just holding on to things that we want to think about the future. We're just holding on to something. It's just like as the monks were holding the log, it was heavy. Sometimes when we hold things in life, our mind gets heavy. So this is a very simple teaching. And but you know, and then the monks threw away the log. And then Ajahn Chah would say, "Is it light now?" And the monk said, "Yes, it's light." And that sort of like indicates as well, you know, our minds. If we learn how to throw things away, like that argument over coffee beans. You know, and things will be okay. You know, as Buddhists, do we try to make a perfect world? You know, we try to be better human beings, I guess. We're not trying to make a perfect world. And we're learning how to let go and forgive and just move on. Because we understand that, I think we just understand that just having a free mind through our actions, through the way we think, it just helps with living like a better life. And I think like that's what people look to religion for, look to different teachings, or look like meditation. They're searching for something to help them better themselves. And you just get these like simple teachings from monks who have done it before and who have done it in the past. And it just helps greatly. Yeah. It's like, I do think maybe it is possible to kind of experience like the kindness of a Buddha within yourself, giving it to other people. You know, you don't need to be the Buddha to be as kind as him. You can just be kind of experience the same thing. You can experience the same kindness that you know, Ajahn Chah or whoever's kind in your life exudes. I mean, I've met non-Buddhists who have been like super kind. It's kind of like their kindness is sort of something that you see and go, that person is a nice person. Yeah. And they didn't need to do anything special. So, you know, we're sort of kind of we're just on a path, I guess, each and every one of us, trying to figure it out, moving along, and just trying to find just a little bit of contentment in life. It's always nice just to be content with whatever you have and just accept yourself for who you are. And I think, I think like, just thinking about Kusala Hermitage and the people that I live with, and it's like, how does that all work out? And I think there's some sort of understanding that the monks have learnt over the years that maybe it's kind of hard to explain, but it's just little bits done at a time. A bit of kindness, a bit of forgiveness, a bit of understanding, accepting people for who they are. So in a sense, just living with Ajahns, we can live harmoniously together, lose it at times. Over coffee beans, but still get along. Yeah, life is not perfect, but you can sort of heal wounds or heal problems quickly. That's the thing. You can heal things quickly, let go of things quickly, and this makes a better life. Okay, that's enough. All right. Oh, some of you are still here. That's great.
Just one moment, Ajahn Santuti, I turned off the microphones.
Oh, yeah.
Hello, Ajahn. I just want to ask, what do you tell the mind? I mean, like monks, you have more time to meditate, whereas in my life, I find it a little bit hard to sit down and meditate on a routine basis. So what advice do you have for us if sometimes we want to meditate, but the mind goes, no, I don't want to meditate?
So. I think just like... pause. I think we have time to pause from time to time, you know. We don't necessarily have to find a place where we sit with our eyes closed, but if we're just busy doing something, just walk around the corner where you tell yourself, it's not time for me to be on my cell phone, it's not time for me to think anything. It's just, now it's time for me to just pause for like a few moments, yeah, and just get back to that place of just like peace and relaxation, yeah. Mm-hmm. Any more questions? You're getting tired? Sleepy? Is it your bedtime yet? Any questions? No? Okay, yep.
So my question...
Oh, you need the mic.
The reason for the mic is so people can hear it at home.
So my question relates to those situations, for example, that you were giving with the coffee beans. and I feel like sometimes you can have good intentions, but maybe the other person, you know, doesn't, or is out there kind of trying to provoke an argument, and
yeah,
and you know, we can only control what our kind of part of it. So I don't know if you've got anything to add about those situations.
Yeah, sometimes like you do get kind of toxic people, I guess. Are you allowed to say that here at the BSWA? And And yeah, you're just like, you know that you can't really change them or whatever you say is not going to work. So, but if you have to say something, just say it. And I think like minimal contact. Yeah, because this is work. You got to contact, you got to like talk to them or whatever, but you can just be professional about it and try to forget about it and just move on. Yeah, because sometimes, yeah, these people, they just don't let go and they can't control themselves. They must be going through a hard time as well. But, yeah, some people are just like that. You can't really help it, yeah. You can always, don't touch the coffee beans. No. All right.
Hello, Ajahn, advertisement time. It's yeah. About Kusala Hermitage. A lot of us, and my missus and myself, we brought friends to that place, and they really like it, and most of the people, they went back again and again.
Yeah.
Because they find that Ajahn and the monks interact with them, and also the devotees then form chatting group, and they really enjoy the environment. So what is your secret of making people who keep coming back to Kusala?
Don't know. Just be nice. Like I always say, because sometimes I try to encourage the monks to kind of, like, you know, people feed us every day, yeah. So sometimes, you know, you gotta interact with the lay people. And sometimes, you know, monks just want to hide. Yeah, they want to go back to their rooms and not really talk to anybody. But then I was like, you know, they come here and feed you, so at least you gotta sort of give them something back. So I just tell them, this is what you do, and it really works. Just give them 5 minutes of metta. There's a lot of people that come visit you, but if you give them 5 minutes of metta, like loving kindness and care, then that's enough. So that's what I do. I sort of kind of try to do that. I'm not there to kind of entertain you or talk to you for a long time, but I'll give you attention and just give you just be like pure with your intentions, and people can sort of sense it and feel it. So in a sense, you don't have to do too much, yeah, because people know. So that's why I tell them, just give them 5 minutes of metta and you'll be okay. But if you ask me this question in 2 years, it'll probably change. That's the one thing I know about just like answers, question and answers, is that just like throughout the growth of whatever, even like with yourself, You may get asked the same question like 10 years ago and what you get asked now. The answers are kind of always different. Yeah. I should have said something like 15 minutes of metta. Sounds a lot more kinder. What's 5 minutes is nothing. See that? See, you're coming back, right? All right. Okay, any more questions? Comments? No? Okay, very good. Yeah. Okay, we just pay respects to the Buddha.